Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Christian in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
The world is changing.
Christians executed in a mass beheading.
A gunman opened fire on two young journalists.
There's an alarm here.
Celebrations erupted on the steps of the Supreme Court.
They succeeded in painting us as irrational bigots.
More people are exercising freedom from religion.
It's a tough time, but it's a great time to be Catholic in America.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Al, you are doing great work.
It's a wonderful afternoon program.
I love it.
Let us go in peace to love and serve the Lord.
Who's coming with me?
Anyone? Anyone?
And here we go.
And good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. Thanks for joining me. We've got three topics we're going to take up in this hour of Cresta in the Afternoon. The Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, has said that the possible split in the Anglican Worldwide Communion due to profound disagreement over homosexuality would set a bad example for the world. He said, a schism would not be a disaster, but it would be a failure. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, from a Catholic point of view, schism is disaster. But from a non-Catholic point of view, while it's bad, it's not a disaster. It's a mere failure. Look, the reason they're having a split over this is because of the Episcopal Church USA's ordination of an openly homosexual bishop, Gene Robinson, back in 2003. Anglican bishops of Africa are saying that has to be renounced, and that the Anglican Worldwide Communion needs to clarify its teaching on this. We're going to talk to Father Dwight Longenecker about this. Why? Because Father Dwight was in fact an Anglican priest. He was ordained as an Anglican priest after being raised as an evangelical Protestant, became an Anglican, and then in 1995 realized that the Anglican Church was on a path that he couldn't follow any longer. And he entered the Catholic Church and was ordained as a Catholic priest under the special provision that the Church has for Anglican clergy, married Anglican clergy. That's going to come up. Also in this hour, Wes Smith joins us. Wesley is, I think, the leading advocate for human exceptionalism. He's a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center on Human Exceptionalism. If you're not following what he's doing over there, you have to do it. Wes Smith, human exceptionalism, you'll get there. Google it. But we have a lawsuit in Belgium right now, which is trying to force a church-run hospital to perform euthanasia and trying to take up responsibility for pain and suffering for those who they will not perform euthanasia upon. What happens when a country begins to say it's not merely your choice to die, but it's your right to force others to kill you, even those who have moral and spiritual objections to it? That's coming up, a conversation with Wes Smith. Also, last night the president gave his 2016 State of the Union address, and Governor of South Carolina Nikki Haley gave the Republican response afterwards. I want to compare the two, because I think there's one thing which really transcends partisan politics. There's one thing that's very different between the two, and it has to do with Governor Haley's recognition that faith in God holds a people together, even a civic community, not just a church community, but a civic community together, and enables them to practice the civil art of forgiveness and reconciliation. The president, on the other hand, complained about a nation which has lost its capacity to compromise, its capacity to reconcile competing points of view. And I would say the reason the president has that problem and is aware of it is because he himself has failed to recognize the source of reconciliation and respect that allows us to live together in amity. But first, the news headlines with Nick Tom.
Thank you very much, Al. Welcome, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, January 13th. It is the Feast of St. Hilary, and today's news is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley says she was absolutely referring to Donald Trump as one of the loud voices during her response to the State of the Union last night.
He was one of them, yes. He was one. There's other people in the media. There's people in my state. I think we're seeing it across the country. But yes, Mr. Trump has definitely contributed to what I think is just irresponsible talk.
Haley tells NBC's Today Show that her message was clear, that the rhetoric can't happen during the presidential campaign. She has received some pushback from conservative political commentators like Ann Coulter, who tweeted, quote, Trump should deport Nikki Haley, end quote. Haley is considered a top choice among some to be a vice presidential candidate, but says she hasn't thought about such a move. State Department spokesman Mark Toner says there are no indications that U.S. sailors were mistreated during their short time in Iranian captivity.
In fact, it was our understanding that they were given blankets, a place to sleep, as well as fed.
10 sailors were detained by Iranian authorities after two Navy vessels apparently drifted off course. Toner called it a likely mechanical malfunction during a news briefing. The U.S. sailors have been released, and Toner said they will be thoroughly debriefed. Toner insisted that the U.S. has not issued a formal apology to Iran. He was pressed about a video showing one of the sailors apologizing. Toner suggested it may have been coerced and said the video has not been authenticated. The USCCB, joined by several other organizations, has filed a friend of the court brief in several HHS mandates that are before the Supreme Court. The brief stated, quote, to accept the principle advanced by the government in these cases is to hold the government has virtually unimpeded power to force faith-based organizations to violate their conscience as a condition of performing their charitable work, to deter or prevent such work by attaching conditions of the sort that the government has imposed in these cases would seriously harm the public good, end quote. And the big draw for tonight's massive record-breaking Powerball jackpot is just hours away, but what happens if no one wins? The money will reportedly roll over to the unheard amount of $2 billion. And now your fascinating fact for the day. Pigeons have been trained by the U.S. Coast Guard to spot people lost at sea. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Thank you for joining me. Well, terrible situation in Belgium. You've got the situation of a woman who wants to be given a lethal injection. Her family supports it. However, she is on a hospital, which is run by the church. And they've decided to sue this Belgian Catholic care home for refusing to let a doctor euthanize this woman on church premises. So what we've got here is nothing voluntary at all. You've got those who want euthanasia coercing a Catholic institution to perform euthanasia. And again, this is in Belgium. But what is it that euthanasia advocates really want here? My guest, Wesley Smith, a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center on Human Exceptionalism and a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, is the author of many books, including The War on Humans. And we urge you to get to his Human Exceptionalism blog to stay abreast of these issues. Wes, good to have you here. Thanks.
Thank you, Al. Happy New Year.
And to you. This story in Belgium is just incredibly frustrating to read about, especially when last year a paper published in the Journal of Medical Ethics reported that the majority of euthanasia cases in Belgium involve patients who are illegally put to death by doctors. They've never given their consent. Euthanasia is running riot in Belgium.
Well, it always does. And the culture of death brooks no dissent. And what's about to happen up in Canada, I think, illustrates that. Let me tell your listeners what happened in this Belgium case.
Sure.
There was a woman in a Catholic nursing home who decided she wanted to be euthanized, and the operators of the home said, no, you're not going to do it on our premises. This is a Catholic home. That is against Catholic teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So she was moved to another location and killed. And now her family is suing, saying that the it was terrible wrong for a Catholic nursing home not to allow a grievous sin to occur on their premises because it caused everybody involved in the killing of the woman, you know, mental suffering and et cetera and et cetera.
I see. So the killing is over, but the suit is beginning.
Yes, the suit is beginning.
Okay.
And, of course, Belgium doesn't have a First Amendment, so who knows where that will go. But believe me, the culture of death brooks no dissent. In Quebec, which now has legal euthanasia, so euthanasia is here in North America, the Ministry of Health has said that all institutions will have to cooperate, either by doing it or finding another institution that they know will do it and cooperating in that sense. One palliative care center, you're not going to do it on our premises, and I'm paraphrasing here, the Minister of Health said, oh, yes, you are.
Wow.
And then they said, oh, okay, we are. They backed down completely. And it's going to get even more radical because the Canadian Supreme Court last year imposed a national positive right to be euthanized throughout Canada that will take effect later this year.
So to be a good citizen, you've got to be willing to kill.
To be in the medical profession, now in the Canadian situation, the rules are not in place yet, but the recommendations are flowing in. And the recommendations, almost all, if not all, are saying that any doctor who has a religious objection or a moral objection to euthanasia must either kill anyway or become what I call a death pimp. Find a death doctor who will kill. That means that doctors in Canada, whether they're Catholic, Orthodox, Christian, Muslim, or just, you know, even if they're atheist believers in Hippocratic medicine, they face what I call medical martyrdom. That is, that they will have to choose between participating in what they consider to be a grievous moral wrong or even a carnal sin and the potential for professional discipline. There's already a law of this kind in Australia, Victoria, Australia, the state of Victoria, about abortion. A doctor who is asked for an abortion must either do it or refer to a doctor they know will do it. There has been one case I know of in which a doctor was professionally disciplined. He was asked for a sex selection abortion, which he said, that's morally wrong for me.
Mm-hmm.
He refused to refer, and he has been professionally disciplined. In 2010, when I toured the country of Australia, I love Australia, but I toured the country on an anti-euthanasia speaking tour,
mm-hmm.
I was in Perth, and I was introduced to doctors from Sydney who had literally picked up their homes and moved completely across the country to avoid that Victoria law.
Wow.
I asked them, what will happen if it is imposed throughout the country? And they said, we'll have to move. I said, what if there's no place to go? And they said, well, we'll have to stop being doctors.
Oh.
And by the way, people in this country face the prospect of social martyrdom. Let me explain. California has legalized assisted suicide. That means more than 10% of this country, California, Oregon, Washington, Vermont, have statutory legal assisted suicide laws. Now when you read about assisted suicide, you're always hearing that family and friends were there for the event. So,
right.
So what are your listeners going to do if they live in a state where assisted suicide is legal? And they get a call and they say, Grandma's going to kill herself on Thursday. We want you to come.
Yeah. Yeah.
We want you to be there to hold her hand and tell her how much you love her. They are going to be put on the horns of a dilemma. If they go, they're validating suicide.
Right.
They're telling Grandma, even though this isn't the intended message, yes, Grandma, your life isn't worth living.
Yeah.
Yes, Grandma, suicide is right for you. Yes, Grandma, you are a burden. But if they don't go, they could find themselves ostracized from the family when the family says, how dare you be judgmental? Grandma loved you. Why can't you be there for
right,
her death?
Right. You're abandoning your grandmother.
You're abandoning your grandma. And so increasingly, you know, people say, well, fine, let the country do what it wants. Just leave me alone. They're not going to leave you alone.
Exactly. They're not.
So people listening to your and your audience today in the states I mentioned face the potential of what I call social martyrdom. They're going to have to choose between validating suicide, which makes them morally complicit in it, and I would say more morally complicit than the person who actually kills themselves, because that person is in despair and fear and existential crisis.
Yeah.
But if you say, no, I'm not going to do it, perhaps you give grandma the strength to not make a bad choice, you know?
Yeah.
So it's we're going to be entering very perilous times.
And we can't underestimate the power of the media on this, too. We just remember the Brittany Maynard case, made internationally famous, because you write in your First Things article that the People magazine published at least three major stories on Brittany Maynard in which they made her into a saint,
right,
for this young lady for killing herself or asking others to kill her. And you had A-list media presenting her as the messiah of compassion and enlightenment. I think our people, while we've complained about the media for a long time because we don't like sex, violence, and shaping of opinion, I don't think we've entirely grasped what happens when people like Brittany Maynard are turned into exemplars. And those of us who disagree on a large scale will find ourselves not simply being viewed as having a different opinion, but being viewed as wickedly judgmental, narrow, harsh, punitive, intolerant, unwilling to let people kill themselves. I mean, as though some other compassionate thing to do is to stand by and watch someone take their life.
We realize that in the media and now much of the country, that eliminating suffering by eliminating the sufferer,
yeah, that's the key phrase,
is no longer seen as a vice but as a virtue. And the media is, and I think there's a lot of money behind this. You know, the what could be a cheaper medical treatment than suicide?
Right.
The whole idea of assisted suicide and euthanasia is becoming normalized and being pushed as the preferred way to die. That's death with dignity. If you live with dignity, you're ignored or thought of as a chump.
Right. Wes, how do people stay in touch with you?
My Twitter is @ForceDexit, and of course the Human Exceptionalism blog at nationalreview.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten in part by Charity Mobile. Communication is critical. And in today's world, your cellular service is your lifeline to family and friends. Ave Maria Radio and Charity Mobile are partners in communicating the most important message of all, the good news of Jesus Christ. Charity Mobile is a provider of cellular LTE phones and service and has been a proud supporter of Ave Maria Radio and other pro-life causes for more than 10 years. More information at charitymobile.com. Charity Mobile. Charity begins at phone. Republicans, Democrats, no matter which political party is in office, there are always investment opportunities to be found. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds won't compromise the moral beliefs of its investors. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. The portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and moral values. Call toll-free 866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com.
Schwartz Investment Counsel, Inc., a registered investment advisor established in 1980, serves as an investment advisor. All mutual funds are subject to market risk, including possible loss of principal. To obtain performance through the most recent month-end and a prospectus, which includes objectives, risks, fees, expenses, and other information that you should read and consider carefully before investing, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com. Distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC.
The Heart to Heart Apostle meets this Thursday the 14th at Domino's Farms in Ann Arbor. Can music make you more virtuous or more sinful? Don't underestimate the powerful influence of music in your life and listen to Cindy Brown's talk on the role of music in Christian life. That's this Thursday, starting at 7:30 p.m. at the bar next to Christ the King Catholic Church at Domino's Farms. All adults are welcome. For more information, go to hearttoheartcwa.com. That's hearttoheartcwa.com.
On the evening of February 25th, 2013, Dr. Peter Kraft spoke to Sacred Heart Major Seminary students and guests about the new evangelism.
How shall we answer our question? What does the new evangelization need the most? Well, we first should define terms. It's a very useful and helpful thing to do, to define terms, because when you define your terms, you know what you're talking about. And when you don't know what you're talking about, well, you don't know what you're talking about. What is the new evangelization? It is not a new evangel, it is a new ization. It's not a new gospel, it's the old gospel.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting on the Mind of Christ. Sacred Heart Major Seminary's auditorium is jammed. You won't want to miss Dr. Peter Graft of the seminary on the next Putting on the Mind of Christ. It's heard this and every Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on 990 WDEL, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak. We're told that money can't buy happiness, and that's largely true. But new research from the Harvard Business School shows that what we do spend our money on can actually boost how happy we feel. It turns out spending money on ourselves or buying things, even fun things, doesn't really do much to make us happier. But when we use our money to invest in others, by giving to a charity, helping a stranger, or even buying our friend lunch, we experience a lift. Our Catholic faith tells us that we're stewards of the gifts God's given us, and that being a good steward means sharing what we have. I guess it shouldn't come as too big a surprise to know that when we follow God's will for our lives and our money, He gives us the grace to be happier. Would you like to be happier today? Find someone you can invest in and be generous. You'll be happy you did. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. The heads of the Anglican Communion in 38 countries started a week-long meeting this week in what looks to be a desperate attempt to prevent the third largest international Christian denomination from splitting over homosexuality. Join me right now to talk about the plausibility of the Anglican Communion, the worldwide Anglican Communion, remaining united within their understanding of the term. I've got Father Dwight Longenecker with me. He was brought up an evangelical Protestant, eventually ordained as an Anglican priest, but back in 1995, he and his family were received into the Catholic Church after he realized that he and the Anglican Church were on divergent paths. At St. Mary's Church in Greenville in December 2006, he was ordained as a Catholic priest under the special pastoral provision for married former Anglican clergy, and now he serves as parish priest of Our Lady of the Rosary Parish. Father Dwight's a well-known Catholic blogger, and you should be reading him at Standing on My Head at Pathios.com. Father, good to have you here.
Thank you very much.
You're still blogging at Pathios, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes, I'm Standing on My Head.
Yes, I just wanted to make sure, because I know some people have left Pathios in the last few months, so I wanted to make sure you're still there.
Blogging is an ever-shifting kind of thing. You know, it's not as permanent as traditional publishing. It's always writers and authors are, you know, freelancers, and they come and go.
Yes. Okay. Well, look, let's talk about this particular thing, Father. I heard the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, in a quote, what sounded to me, I mean, he's issuing basically a counsel of despair. He's saying things like, well, if we do go our separate ways, we're still family, that kind of thing. Is he simply admitting that there will be a split, or is that an implicit threat that those who do split will have remain some sort of spiritual bond with the Anglican Communion, but will not be able to rely upon any financial support?
Well, it's a pretty complicated question. One of the things which complicates it enormously is that the Anglicans are extremely good. They've had 500 years to perfect a kind of theological sleight of hand.
Right.
They're very good at saying one thing but having a different interpretation
right.
of it when you really push them on it.
That's true.
So they're very slippery in that way and difficult to pin down. So it's always difficult to know exactly what an Anglican does actually believe and what he stands for, because he's very likely to shift his view according to who he's talking to and to adjust and to accommodate. Now,
mm-hmm.
when I say Anglican, I'm talking about Church of England.
Yes.
The big problem here, and Episcopalians, that's the American wing of
right.
the Anglican
right.
Communion,
mm-hmm.
and the big problem here, of course, is that the Anglicans in the developing world, in Africa especially, they don't have any time for this kind of what I call slippery theology, this
right.
kind of saying one thing and actually meaning the other,
mm-hmm.
and making allowances for everyone and trying to keep the broad church afloat. The African Anglicans are, especially the most articulate and vocal ones, have been evangelized by Protestant or evangelical Anglicans from the evangelical Protestant wing. And so they tend to be conservative in their
mm-hmm.
cultural views, conservative in their biblical interpretation, conservative in their theology, but also very dynamic, outspoken, and with a kind of hungry, prophetic voice that we very often hear from the developed world.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is really the clash which is going on. It's not so much a clash of Anglicanism, but a clash of cultures within Anglicanism.
Is it somewhat similar, Father, to what we heard during the synod, in where you had people like Cardinal Robert Serra speaking very clearly about the family, sexual expression, comparing his voice to that of some of the German clerics who seemed much more mediating in their position?
Yes, Al, you're absolutely right, because the conflict exists within our church as well.
Right.
And this is a conflict of cultures. John Allen's book, Future Church, is a brilliant read on this particular subject.
I agree. Yep.
This is the way of the future. The Christians of this century will be young, will be hungry, will be orthodox, will believe in a fully supernatural Christianity. They also will have undergone and gone through persecution. A cardinal like Cardinal Sarah, for instance, has lived through a brutal communist dictatorship in his own country where the church was persecuted. And these are our Christian brothers and sisters who are on the front line of the war with radical Islam, or they're in the front line of the culture wars in their own country and their own continent. And we sort of comfortable, complacent, suburban Christians in the West are saying, whoa, these people mean business.
They're serious. Yeah.
And so this is the clash. I find it an exciting clash.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not happy for the Anglicans who are going through this tension right now, but it's an exciting thing. It means that Christianity is alive in the world, the gospel's alive, and there are plenty of our brothers and sisters in the developing world who are rolling up their sleeves and saying, you know, let's declare the gospel of life and the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's what we're here for. And the liberal sort of modernist Christians in the comfortable West, whether they're Catholics or Anglicans, are obviously shaking in their boots and quite upset
right.
by all this.
Yeah. Now, you've got there in Uganda Archbishop Stanley Ntagali. He's head of the Anglican Church in Uganda. He issued a pastoral message to the Ugandan Church claiming that the, quote, Provincial Assembly of the Church of Uganda has resolved to not participate in any official meetings of the Anglican Communion until godly order is restored. Now, by that, does he mean that the Anglican Communion has to condemn and discipline the Episcopal Church of the United States for its ordination of that openly homosexual bishop, Gene Robinson, back in 2003?
Yes, what we're seeing here really is a battle for the future of Anglicanism. The African bishops are saying, quite honestly, they're saying, look, we have the numbers, we have the youth, we have the majority. I remember one conversation at a Lambeth conference a few years ago. This is a conference where all the Anglican bishops gathered together, and an Episcopalian bishop was sort of talking down to one of the African bishops and saying, you know, when you understand more about human sexuality as we do, you will be more flexible about homosexuality. And African bishop said, excuse me, you're being racist. I too have my PhD from Princeton. We too have studied at Oxford and Cambridge. You know, and really gave it to him.
Yeah.
And so this is a battle really for the future of Anglicanism. And the Africans are saying, the future belongs to us. Why should we go? Why should we leave? You're the ones who have left the historic faith. You're the ones who have left the biblical faith. You're the ones whose church is elderly, declining, and collapsing. You leave.
Yeah.
this is really an interesting and fascinating battle, because in the past, within Protestantism, very often the groups like the Africans would simply quietly slip away and say, okay, we're leaving, and form another schism.
Right.
And what they're basically saying to the establishment of New York and Canterbury is, no, you leave.
Right. You're the ones who have altered the faith, not us.
Right.
Let me ask this, though, the mundane but often serious issue of money. Is the Anglican Church, in Africa, I guess, what would you call it, self-supporting, financially self-supporting?
You know, the Anglican Church in Africa, you have to understand, each of the national churches, Anglican churches, are autonomous.
Okay.
They're not controlled by Canterbury or York. They're not controlled by New York. The American Episcopal Church is autonomous. The Anglican Church in Canada is autonomous. The Church of England is autonomous. The Church in Uganda, the Church in Kenya, and so forth are all technically autonomous. However, they do have links with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another very interesting story of an Episcopal bishop from the United States who flew out to Uganda or one of these countries in Africa on a sort of reconciliation mission. He went there, swooped in with his entourage and all the rest to visit with his African brothers over this issue of homosexuality. And the African bishop pegged what was going on immediately and saw that the American bishop was arriving with his checkbook. And the Ugandan the African bishop said to him, you can get back on your plane and go home. The church in Uganda is not for sale.
Wow. Whoa.
So this is the sort of conversations that are going on. And so, yes, there is a financial implication, but the Africans are standing firm and saying, I'm sorry, our church is not for sale. We would rather be self-supporting than rely on your dollars.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's encouraging. Do you have any predictions on this? Do you think that the schism will actually be institutional? Or will it remain simply one of doctrine at the moment?
No, it'll become institutional. GAFCON is the organization which has gathered together the conservatives globally, and I believe they will eventually form their own organization. Well, they already have formed their own organization, but I think it'll become increasingly institutional, which they have their own hierarchy and bishops, which are established a network around the world. One interesting thing which may develop is they may not form a new church, as it were. They may simply choose to remain a very important pressure group within the Anglican Communion. Mm-hmm. In other words, again, they might say to Canterbury and York, no, we're not actually leaving.
We're not leaving.
You might like us to leave. We're not. We're staying here as the thorn in your side, as it were. Because this is our church. Why should we leave? We're going to stay here, but we're forming this body, which will continue to be an alternative body. We reject your authority. We reject your positions. But this is the new form of the Anglican worldwide Anglican Communion.
Very good. Well, Father, let's stay in touch on this. This is fascinating, and again, we're seeing an example of biblical fidelity working out. So thank you so much, Father.
Great to be with you, Al. God bless you in your ministry.
Father Dwight Longenecker, standing on my head at Pathios.com.
Charity Mobile is the only pro-life mobile phone corporation. LifeSite News recently featured corporate watchdog Second Vote and their research of corporations that fund Planned Parenthood. The article concluded that only 7 corporations are ranked as being pro-life, while 234 corporations have abortion-supporting scores. Charity Mobile is one of the 7 pro-life corporations and the only mobile phone company. 5% of your monthly talk plan price goes to the pro-life charity of your choice, and there are no contracts, no termination fees, and no risk with your 30-day trial. Call 877-474-3662 or go to CharityMobile.com today. Mention Ave Maria Radio and get a free 4G LTE smartphone plus free activation and free shipping. Life is calling. Take it with you. Call 877-474-3662 or go to CharityMobile.com today.
The following is a message brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan.
Jesus instructs us to not be afraid. Yet one common fear is that of loneliness or thinking no one cares. This can cloud our lives with disillusion and despair. However, we are never alone. As John's Gospel and letters emphasize, God is love and cares for us so much that he redeemed us through Jesus, his Son. And Jesus did not redeem us as strangers, but as people he knows well enough to call by individual name. On Easter morning, Mary Magdalene rejoiced when she heard Jesus call her name, and Jesus is waiting for us to rejoice as he calls our names each day. Let us pray that we can hear God calling our name and know that we are loved as his children. This message is brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan, cbsmich.org.
Do not settle for a government-controlled and mandated healthcare system that forces you to choose between your healthcare and your faith. CMF Curo is a Catholic healthcare ministry that allows you to provide for you and your family's healthcare needs and to live your Catholic faith. Get the personal guidance from our ministry to make the right decision for you and your family. This is Lewis Brown, director of CMF Curo, and I invite you to check out CMF Curo today at cmfcuro.com. That is cmfcuro.com.
Planned Parenthood is making headlines these days for butchering babies and selling their body parts. The American people are rightfully horrified by the video evidence demonstrating what most pro-lifers have always known. The abortion industry is barbaric. And the horror of abortion finally made its way into the mainstream media by way of a presidential debate hosted by CNN. During this debate, presidential candidate Carly Fiorina described in graphic detail the horror that goes on in an abortion mill. She described a fully formed fetus on the table, its heart beating, its legs kicking, while someone says we have to keep it alive to harvest its brain. Fiorina was referring to a video in which a former worker for a biomedical research company said she saw a fully formed fetus's heart beating. The technician says on the video, "This is the most gestated fetus and closest thing to a baby I have seen. I'm sitting here looking at this fetus and its heart is beating and I don't know what to do." This video proceeds to show a fully formed fetus on an operating table with its legs twitching. Some have attempted to attack the authenticity of the videos, but they cannot refute the authenticity of the claim that abortion is savagely cruel. And so in the end, Ms. Fiorina is right on point when she says that the abortion issue is ultimately about our character as a nation. I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website, liking us on Facebook, and following us on Twitter.
And good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. The president last night stepped to the podium, gave his State of the Union address. It's the 8th year that he's come to report on the State of the Union. And it was, I don't know what to say about it. It in some ways, it was a list of wishes, and wishes that many of us would agree with. The problem is he claimed that those wishes had been fulfilled in his administration. It was, I thought, disconnected from the the reality of things. He did not seem really attentive to the discontent of the American people at this time, the concerns about health care, the concerns about international order, the concerns about, well, the one thing he did get quite right was the concern about the state of our political discourse, the problems we have, trusting one another, solving problems together. And, in fact, why don't we let me just jump right there, because I much could be said about – I'll make one first. Before I go there, let me make one point. I don't know how he can talk about the international order being in better condition than when he became president. The Middle East is in more turmoil than I remember seeing in my lifetime. The conflict between Saudi Arabia and Iran is vastly worse than it was at any time that I recall since the 1979 revolution in Iran. You've got a civil war in Syria that's been going on for 5 years, and the United States has been powerless to help resolve that. And it's tried, okay? So this is part of the problem. It's not that we just stood by. It's that we actually dither, and we do a little bit here, and then we back away. We have the rise of ISIS, which is now has partners in 20 countries. We've got fewer nations that are considered democratic today than when he came to office. So I don't understand how he can stand up there and basically say that he's done what he was elected to do. It's disconnected from reality. This was a great speech if he had given it in 2008. But these things have not been fulfilled. One point, though, he did, in fact, mention some difficulty, and I was glad to hear him say it. Let's begin with that cup.
And that brings me to the fourth and maybe most important thing that I want to say tonight. The future we want, all of us want, opportunity and security for our families, a rising standard of living, a sustainable, peaceful planet for our kids. All that is within our reach.
Nobody disagrees.
But it will only happen if we work together.
Nobody disagrees.
It will only happen if we can have rational, constructive debates.
Nobody disagrees.
It will only happen if we fix our politics.
Amen.
A better politics doesn't mean we have to agree on everything.
Nobody disagrees.
But democracy does require basic bonds of trust between its citizens.
Amen.
It doesn't work if we think the people who disagree with us are all motivated by malice. It doesn't work if we think that our political opponents are unpatriotic.
Agreed.
Or trying to weaken America. Democracy grinds to a halt without a willingness to compromise.
Right.
Or when even basic facts are contested.
Mm-hmm.
Or when we listen only to those who agree with us. Our public life withers when only the most extreme voices get all the attention.
Couldn't agree more.
And most of all, democracy breaks down when the average person feels their voice doesn't matter.
Like the Little Sisters of
the Poor. That the system is rigged in favor of the rich or the powerful or some special interest.
Mm-hmm.
Too many Americans feel that way right now.
That's right. Like the Little Sisters of the Poor.
It's one of the few regrets of my presidency. But the rancor and suspicion between the parties has gotten worse instead of better. I have no doubt a president with the gifts of Lincoln or Roosevelt might have better bridged the divide. And I guarantee I'll keep trying to be better so long as I hold this office.
Mm-hmm. Well, agreed. You are no Lincoln or Roosevelt. That's settled. Look, much of what he said there, who could disagree with it? The problem is behavior. When we refuse, he mentions one of the big problems. When we refuse to acknowledge the basic facts before us. He's talking here about scientific facts. He wants to talk about global warming. But the truth is, the most basic scientific fact that is, it's uncontested, but it's ignored, is the status of unborn human life. This is an area in which he could easily have compromised on. He didn't even have to change his overall position. He just could have done what Bill Clinton did and at least strive to make abortions safe, legal, and rare. He's the one who eliminated rare from the phrase. So when he talks about extreme cases, he has been an extremist in the area of abortion, and he's also been an extremist in the area of religious accommodation. No president has ever tried to do what President Obama has done, enforcing, in this case, the Catholic Church in particular, to somehow participate in insurance coverage, which violated its own teaching. Now, I don't want to go into the details of it. It would take us too far off the track. But this is the man who tried to tell the Lutheran Church that it could not define who a minister was within their polity. He wanted the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission to bring, and he did. They did. They brought suit against the particular Lutheran Church over who counts as a minister within their church structure, within their education structure. Now, thankfully, the Supreme Court socked it to him, and he lost, didn't gain a single vote on the Supreme Court on that one. But then he went ahead and forced the Catholic Church and other organizations that oppose contraception and abortifacient drugs, tried to force them to include those in insurance policies. I'm glad the president does see that this has been a massive failure on his part. He says it's not his fault alone. I'm sure that's true. It's politics gets very ugly. Partisan politics is an ugly affair, unfortunately. And people are often wickedly unfair, unwilling to compromise. It's not his fault alone. But the point is, he was the president. We expect the president to set the tone. He failed to set the tone on issues of race. He failed to set the tone on issues of life. He failed to set the tone on issues of family. He flip-flopped on same-sex so-called marriage. And then he applauded the Supreme Court for accusing those of us who oppose same-sex marriage for being irrational bigots, when in fact he himself a few years before would have been called, by his standards, an irrational bigot, as would Mrs. Clinton. So compare that to what we heard from Nikki Haley last night. And again, I'm not so interested who's the Republican, who's the Democrat here. What I'm interested in is the approach to our life together as citizens. Who are we, the people? And this is what she had to say last night. She talked about this, what happened in South Carolina this past summer in the murder of those Christians in Bible study. Let's play Nikki Haley's quote last night.
This past summer, South Carolina was dealt a tragic blow. On an otherwise ordinary Wednesday evening in June, at the historic Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, 12 faithful men and women, young and old, went to Bible study. That night, someone new joined them. He didn't look like them, didn't act like them, didn't sound like them. They didn't throw him out. They didn't call the police. Instead, they pulled up a chair and prayed with him for an hour. We lost 9 incredible souls that night. What happened after the tragedy is worth pausing to think about. Our state was struck with shock, pain, and fear. But our people would not allow hate to win. We didn't have violence, we had vigils. We didn't have riots, we had hugs. We didn't turn against each other's race or religion. We turned toward God and to the values that have long made our country the freest and greatest in the world. We removed a symbol that was being used to divide us, and we found a strength that united us against a domestic terrorist and the hate that filled him.
And then she goes on to say, there's an important lesson in this. In many parts of society today, whether in popular culture, academia, the media, or politics, there's a tendency to falsely equate noise with results. You know, I go back and I look at the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s, which actually was motivated by many Christian impulses and had great Christian leadership. And real progress was made under the leadership of Martin Luther King Jr. Where he would have ended up in the long run, I don't know. He was assassinated at the age of 39, so who knows where he would have ended up. But while he was active, he used the moral resources of America to achieve a revolutionary result and to push America towards the fulfillment of the promise of its founders, and that is that all of us are created equal before God. And, what happened after that, and that was not, while he used peaceful means, it was a conflicted time in America. But after that moral emphasis was lost, and you had the rise of the Black Power movement and the Black Muslims, you had a lot more noise and a lot less progress. And that's what Nikki Haley is getting at in last night's talk. Look, we are best joined together as a people when we recognize something above us. If we're looking just to ourselves, we're going to have conflict and division without any hope of unity. When we recognize that there is something transcendent to all of us, and in the American experience, that's going to be God of some sort. Without recognizing that transcendent source of unity above us, our politics become religious wars. When you recognize that there is, in fact, a person, a power beyond us, our politics takes second place and doesn't turn into a source of hate. I thought she had the better message last night, and I wish the president would have used that example of the great victory in South Carolina as an example for the nation. He didn't. And that was a result of his own benighted vision.
When you're looking for care for a loved one and you want them to remain independent and living at home, Visiting Angels is ready to serve. Visiting Angels franchises provide the compassionate, professional caregivers needed to deliver the best home care available. You may select your caregiver before service begins. Services include bathing, dressing, errands, light housekeeping, meal preparation, and more, up to 24 hours each day. With over 500 franchised offices nationwide, Visiting Angels is America's choice in senior home care. Employment opportunities and caregiving for Visiting Angels are available. You'll receive the support needed to fulfill your goal of achieving a caring career. Franchise opportunities are also available. Call today at 877-374-LIVE or visit us online at visitingangels.com. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels at 877-374-LIVE. Each office is independently owned and operated.
Are you tired of watching your retirement money seem to do well, only to have it go right back down every few years? Of talking with someone different every time you're at the bank or investment firm who doesn't really know what's important to you? Are you fed up with paying all the high fees and not really understanding how your investments work? It's time to take back control of your own destiny. Work with an independent advisor who is not beholden to any bank or investment firm. Someone you can count on to be there for you throughout the years, who will take the time to listen to you and understand your retirement picture the way you want it to be. And then help you position your retirement money so that your interests are served, not someone else's. Speak with Reno Frazetta at Smart Money Financial Advisors, based right here in Southeast Michigan. Call 248-468-4401. That's 248-468-4401. And speak with Reno directly.
Advisory services offered through CoreCap Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Tresta. Thank you for being with me over the last hour. Let me just draw on one point from the presentations last night of the President Obama and Nikki Haley, Governor Haley. Look, faith in God has been a major part of American life, and it's never stood alone. In the sense, America's history can be looked at as an ongoing conflict between hustlers and Puritans. So there's always been a battle, or hustlers and evangelicals. Look, Wes Smith told us what happens when we create a sense of community which is closed in on itself, when there's no higher power overseeing it. We end up forcing one another to kill. And that's what we're looking at now with the euthanasia advocates. We see the same thing in the abortion controversy. When we don't think that there's any higher value or higher meaning to human life than what's in front of us, we find it easy to exclude unborn children from we the people. America will not restore its greatness unless it restores its faith in some higher intelligence, higher power, that God exists. After the Second World War, 96% of Americans were members of churches, according to the American census of that period. It's hard to believe. In the 1950s, we added "In God We Trust" and "Under God" to our currency and to the Pledge of Allegiance, respectively. We're going the opposite direction now, and that's not good. And it will make for violence in the future, violence against one another. I'm Al Cresta. Be back tomorrow.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. The executive producer is Nick Tom. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506. Or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506. Or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. May I extend to you a personal invitation to join me for the annual March for Life in Washington, D.C. on January 22nd. On the morning of the march, I will lead and preach at an interdenominational gathering in Constitution Hall at 8:30 a.m. and present a pro-life award to outstanding leaders. This is the premier indoor pro-life event on that day. Admission is free. Then, as the marchers reach the Supreme Court, I will be gathered with the women and men of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign. Those hurt by abortion will share their testimonies. Please come to show them your spiritual support and gratitude for exposing the damage abortion does. Let's match their courage with ours in spreading their stories. You can get more information about both events by visiting priestsforlife.org. This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
Here's a Family Minute with child psychologist Dr. Ray Guarendi from Ave Maria Radio.
What do you do when your kids act up in public? Yesterday, we said why they acted up in public. Some of the reasons included limited discipline latitude on your part, an audience on their part, chances to get carried away by the stream of events out in public. So what do you do about